This is Tuesday, May 2nd. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, President Trump says if conditions are right, he would deem it an honor to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un while at the same time enforcing American military power in the region.
He's making threats, but at the same time, he's saying that, you know, we can talk about this and try to find a peaceful way out of this confrontation. So that's not a bad way of going about it.
We'll have more on that in a moment. Also ahead, the U.S. president has scheduled a phone call with his Russian counterpart. We examine that. And Carolyn Pursuti has the story of how one musical instrument has been physically beneficial to one senior citizen. It's all on today's International Edition.
As you most likely have heard already, President Trump was asked by Bloomberg News about his willingness to meet with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
If it would be appropriate for me to meet with him. I would be honored to do it. If it's under the under the right circumstances.
Joining us on International Edition is Joel Witt, a senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at SAIS, as well as a senior research fellow at Columbia University's Weatherhead Institute for East Asian Studies. We'll tell you right now that Joel's waiting to board an airplane at an airport, so all of the announcements and jet engine noise that you hear is understandable. Joel, thanks for being with us. What did you make of the president's statement about he would deem it an honor to meet with Kim Jong-un?
Well, I think it was certainly inelegantly stated, but the bottom line here is that if you look beyond all the gaffes and all the mistakes, the administration does have a strategy for dealing with North Korea, and part of that strategy is now becoming much more obvious, and that's a diplomatic track, a serious diplomatic effort to achieve denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And I think that's what people should be focused on.
How do you then factor in the tougher and tougher talk that has been made by President Trump in reaction to the ever-belligerent charges made by the North Korean leader?
Well, you know, this is not complicated. It's coercive diplomacy 101. And that means that you talk tough, you take steps to put pressure on the other side, but at the same time, you give them an escape route to move down if they decide that talking is in their interest. So putting those components together, that's what all this means. He's talking tough. He's making threats, but at the same time, he's saying that, you know, we can talk about this and try to find a peaceful way out of this confrontation. So that's not a bad way of going about it.
So you're in favor of how this is being played out so far from the Oval Office?
When I say inelegant, I should probably say in capital letters. I think it's being done very badly. But behind the rhetoric, behind the missteps, you can see that there is clearly a strategy here. And I don't know if it's going to work, but at least the administration is trying. And quite frankly, I'm not a big supporter of President Trump, but I got to give them credit on this, that at least they're taking it seriously, they're trying, and they're probably not going about it the right way. But you can see a strategy here is clearly different from the Obama administration's strategy.
The extra added attraction here, if you will, is the building relationship, or at least on the surface building relationship, when it comes to North Korea, the United States, and China. How does that factor in?
Well, I think this has been a subtext all along, and certainly since Secretary Tillerson's visit to Beijing, and certainly since President Xi's meeting with President Trump, the Chinese want certain things from the United States. And one of the things they want is for Washington to seriously pursue a dialogue with North Korea. And that's what we're seeing is at least signals that we're interested in a serious dialogue. And the flip side of the coin is that the Chinese are, to some degree, stepping up their threats against North Korea. So you can see a conversation here between the United States and China, which is not a dialogue of the deaf, but a conversation in which both sides are trying to build greater cooperation.
That is China. Let's move our focus now to South Korea, where there is a transition underway where the conservative president might find herself in jail for a number of years, if not longer, possibly to be replaced by a president with a far different political agenda. How do you see that happening?
Well, this is another aspect of what appears to be the administration's policy. You can't predict for sure, but it now looks like Moon Jae-in, one of the presidential candidates, is going to win the election on May 9th. And he is going to pursue a much softer approach to North Korea than his more conservative predecessor. If he does win, and that is his approach, I think the U.S. strategy plays into that very nicely, because the South Koreans are going to want the U.S. to engage North Korea in dialogue. And so what the administration is doing is at least putting it in the same ballpark as a new South Korean president.
How dangerous does the situation look to you to be standing right now?
Well, I think the situation is not nearly as dangerous as everyone's portraying it, including the media. I think that it is true that North Korea could start testing a ballistic missile that can reach the West Coast sometime this year, but that means just testing it. They're not going to deploy it, and we don't even know if that's going to happen or not. So, you know, the threat is there. We need to do something about it, but it's not a threat that's going to emerge in the next day or month or even year. But I think what is going on fits very nicely into the administration strategy, which is they're elevating the attention given to this issue publicly, and that reflects their own attention. And I think that's very important because in the past, people really haven't been paying attention to this issue. So we need to pay attention. We need to fashion a strategy, and we need to sustain that strategy. And the administration's trying to do that. Once again, in a very inelegant way, but at least they're trying.
Joel Witt is a senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at SAIS, also a senior research fellow at Columbia University's Weatherhead Institute for East Asian Studies. Thank you, Joel. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, let's see what's happening on social media. First, as this story, as it pertains to this story, Andrew Palshevsky joins us as always. What are people saying about this?
In a word, what? That's generally the reaction on social media. You have a lot of people wondering why President Trump would have such praise for Kim Jong-un, among them Senator John McCain, who called the comments disturbing. A lot of people also lumping in the comments about Kim Jong-un with the other leaders that Trump has praised or invited to the White House, including Egyptian President Sisi, Rodrigo Duterte, the president of the Philippines, saying that he's turned a new page in American diplomacy in appealing to some of the world's biggest dictators.
That's one of the reasons I found Mr. Witt's comments. I mean, he is admitting he's not a Trump supporter, but thinks that the offer to talk with Kim Jong-un, if the conditions come around, is a good move and a positive move.
And that's something that we actually do see on social media, some people defending President Trump, saying that it's a diplomatic move. He's a negotiator. It's good to get somebody to the table rather than going to war or threats of going to war to sit down and talk it out. So you are seeing some people defend this line of diplomacy, saying that it might actually help to improve relations with North Korea.
Well, this is on the table of conversation. And also, President Trump has a telephone call scheduled for just about now, maybe in a little while, with the leader of Russia, Mr. Putin, and Steve Herman joins us live from the White House. Where's that stand, Steve?
Well, the call was supposed to start 45 minutes ago, but we have no confirmation that it started or it has happened, and it may be some hours before we get any readout of what they discuss. It'll probably come first from Moscow in Russian, and then the White House here tends to put out their very terse confirmations.
No live coverage, huh?
No live coverage. Although the press secretary, Sean Spicer, will be at the podium in just about 15 minutes, and he may make some comments about this and confirm it.
Well, I hate to speculate, and you know, we're not in the business of speculation here, but that's what we're forced to do at times, and that is, you wouldn't think that Mr. Trump is going to bring up the whole thing about Russian spying and election and things like that, correct?
No, we expect that the reason for this phone call really has to do with Syria, and this will be the first conversation between the two since Moscow condemned U.S. military attack against Syria last month following that chemical attack by the Syrian military on civilians.
Well, let me bring Andrew Palczewski into this conversation along with us. Within the past hour or so, Mr. Trump made some comments about his health care bill, and also what happens as far as government employees and the operation of government is concerned come September. You care to give us some background, Steve?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, what's the background on Mr. Trump saying wait till September as far as a possible government shutdown is concerned?
Well, obviously things aren't going the way that he would like them to do on Capitol Hill, and this is his way of trying to put pressure on the Democrats. We know that there are negotiations going on right now regarding the spending bill and others on Capitol Hill. There's the health care overhaul that's stalled, and this is really something that is tarnishing his presidency, and he's well aware of that, and he's trying to fight back, and his most effective weapon is social media, Twitter.
Well, social media is what Andrew Palczewski is watching. What's been the reaction so far on this?
Well, it's interesting to look at President Trump's own words. He tweeted out earlier today that our country needs a good shutdown in September to fix this mess. And then he goes to this news conference.
Man has a way with words, yes.
Yes. Well, he goes to this news conference with the Air Force Academy football team. They beat the Army and Navy football teams to win the Commander-in-Chief's trophy, so they get to go to the White House and meet the president. And so he's honoring them at this news conference, and he says there that the spending bill is a clear win for the American people. 180 degrees opposite direction from that tweet that he sent earlier in the day. So a lot of people trying to parse through this on social media and figure out what exactly his position is. But there are a number of conservatives who are very angry. They're saying that the bill that he's now saying is a great deal for the American people, a clear win for the American people, did not include funding for many of the signature plans that he wanted to put forward, namely the money for the border wall. So a lot of conservatives saying that they're very disappointed that he's acquiescing to this deal. If he is, that's the thing. We don't know whether the tweet is something we should go by, whether his words at the news conference, if it's somewhere in between, that remains to be determined.
Well, our tweet king, Steve Herman, is still with us. Where do you think this all stands, Steve?
Well, I don't know that the president and the Republicans are going to get the votes they need without a tremendous amount of horse trading. Although the president's blaming the Democrats, there are real divisions within the Republican Party, and if he is not able to get something through this week. Looking at what happened previously with that huge embarrassment over the health care bill, there's some speculation that this could really make legislators who are looking forward to their own reelection campaigns risk averse and not wanting to really engage with the administration's wishes. So this is a very crucial week for the president.
Well, we mentioned you were the tweet king, but you're the Facebook king as well. So tell people how they can follow you, if you will.
Well, on Twitter, at W7VOA.
All right. Steve Herman, VOA's White House correspondent. Thanks for joining us. Andrew Palczewski, how do people get in touch with you and me, since I don't know?
You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL. And they can find you on Twitter at VOA Millman.
Let me write that down. Thank you. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Andrew Palczewski here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. President Trump and Russian President Putin are scheduled to have a phone conversation today, their first since Russia condemned a U.S. military attack against Syria last month. Russian President Putin denied Tuesday that Russia interfered in last year's U.S. presidential election, saying such allegations are simply rumors that are being leveraged for political reasons in the United States. At least 32 civilians were killed Tuesday in a surprise Islamic State attack near a refugee camp on the Syrian side of the border with Iraq. That according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. The United Nations Children's Agency says the number of malnourished children is rising in Somalia as that country deals with a major drought and nears famine. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A star being consumed by a black hole may be quite common, but news of stars being formed by a black hole could be something to notice. A UK-led group of scientists recently made what they say are the first confirmed observations of stars forming inside blasts of material that pour out from supermassive black holes located at the center of galaxies. As a black hole devours a star or other cosmic object, it can only handle so much of the material at one time. The remaining matter is heated and blown out from the abyss with powerful and dense winds. The ejected matter then gathers around the black hole and forms a ring of material known as an accretion disk before being pulled in by the tremendous gravity of the black hole. The scientists made their discovery as they observed the collision of two galaxies located some 600 million light years from Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Some of the other news making headlines today, the mayor of Boston, Marty Walsh, says that taunting and heckling and using racial slurs against a Baltimore Orioles baseball player, Adam Jones, is unacceptable. Walsh told WBZ Radio in Boston that something like this doesn't belong in sports. Walsh says he wishes he could find out who used the racial slurs. If they claim to be a sports fan, they're not a sports fan, nothing but a racist, said Walsh. He apologized on behalf of the city. City of Boston, the Red Sox organization, do not condone this type of behavior, Walsh said. It's an unfortunate incident, and it should not reflect the city of who we are in Boston. Walsh predicted that Jones would get a standing ovation when the teams meet again Tuesday night, saying, I think Red Sox fans will step it up tonight. This is VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
We continue on International Edition. Since the beginning of time, every generation has tried to find the secret to staying young. One man might have discovered the key in something we can all do, no matter what our age. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti takes us on his musical journey and tells us how it can help anyone with breathing problems.
At Christmas time, we always had a stocking hung.
And when he was six, Jack Hopkins found a plastic harmonica in his. The next week, he shocked his dad.
He heard me playing popular tune of the day, Yes or She's My Baby, and it blew his mind.
Now, thousands of songs later, Jack jams at the Virginia Harmonica Fest. It's a gray-haired bunch who blow classic tunes. Jack founded the Capitol Harmonica Club a while back. He's outlived them all, except Frank Jameson.
I'm 84, so anyway, so it just, you know, I'll never catch up to Jack, but maybe that's okay.
That's the laugh of a man who just turned 97 years old. Jack credits his strong lungs to years of cradling a mean harmonica.
That's because it's the only popular instrument that requires an inhale and an exhale to make music. In harmonica terms, draw and blow, like this.
Everybody ready?
So harmonicas are physical therapy for chronic pulmonary patients in Western Maryland. This group is called the Better Breathers. Kathy Middleton has been on oxygen for 7 years.
You know, as long as it closes up like this when you breathe, mine goes like this. And when you're blowing on that harmonica, I feel like I'm breathing better.
Jack says his harmonica helped him get better from a heart attack. Yep, that's him, making music in the hospital. For Jack, music is the tempo of life, played in the key of perpetual youth.
It's been a great life, and it ain't over yet.
Carolyn Presutti. VOA News, Norfolk, Virginia.
You have been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook, VOA Now, Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin. John Dryden's been our engineer. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In response to the chemical weapons attack April 4th that killed approximately 100 civilians in the town of Khan Sheikhoun, Syria, the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, has announced sanctions against 271 employees of the Syrian government agency responsible for developing such weapons and the means to deliver them. The 271 designated individuals from Syria's Scientific Studies and Research Center have expertise in chemistry or have worked in support of the center's chemical weapons program since at least 2012. As a result of their designation, any assets these people hold in the United States are frozen, and U.S. persons and businesses are generally prohibited from conducting business with them. The U.S. move comes just weeks after the regime of Bashar al-Assad dropped chemical weapons from the sky on Khan Sheikhoun, resulting in an agonizing death for the villagers below. And it follows the United States' targeted military response 2 days later of launching 59 missiles onto the airfield from which Assad's chemical weapons attack originated. At a press briefing at the White House, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the action against the staff of Syria's Scientific Studies and Research Center is one of the largest ever executed by OFAC.
In a single action, we are more than doubling the number of individuals and entities sanctioned since the start of the Syrian conflict pursuant to Syria-related executive orders. These sweeping sanctions are intended to hold the Assad regime and those who support it directly or indirectly accountable for their blatant violations of the Chemical Weapons Convention in UN Security Council Resolution 2118.
The United States is sending a strong message that we will not tolerate the use of chemical weapons by any actor, and we intend to hold the Assad regime accountable for its unacceptable behavior, Mr. Mnuchin said. The Treasury Department, together with the Department of State and our international partners, will continue to relentlessly pursue and shut down the financial networks of any individuals involved with serious production and use of chemical weapons.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.